हरे सहनावतु सहन भुनक्तु सह देवं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, welcome, good morning to everyone. So, today is the third day, and as we announced today, we're going to expand a little bit from what Maharaj spoke yesterday about the curriculum itself, trying to go into more details on how the different subjects are taught in Gurukul, in the Vedic system, which is quite different from the education that we are used to. So we're going to have different teachers coming. We have already some teachers here. They will speak about the different subjects we have in Gurukul and how we apply these subjects, how we teach these subjects, the importance of these subjects. And yeah, so we don't have a framework for this session. It's just any questions you want to do, you raise your hands and the teachers can answer. Yesterday when television program was here for the last 2 days, and they asked us, the teachers, so introduce your name and tell why you're teaching Gurukul. And we are telling them that Gurukul is different. We teach everything. We are parents, we are friends, we are math teachers, we are English teachers, we teach them etiquette, everything. It's not like in the industrial education that each teacher takes care of one section of the final product. That is different. So if you have any questions, the teachers also should be free to answer. Not all teachers will be here all the time because we're running during the festival. We're running many activities at the same time. So some teachers will stay, some teachers will come and go. And by the end, we'll do some activity with all of you. So we'll start with Lieutenant Mushad to speak about Pancharatrik, how we teach in Gurukul. Why we teach?
Hare Krishna. So, the basis of Pancharatra, we all know it as its deity worship. The way it was introduced was Lord Brahma, he was performing creation. And in the creation, then there were two demons. They appeared from the back of Lord Vishnu, and their name was Madhu and Kaitava. Very, very powerful demons. What they did is they stole the knowledge of Veda from the mind of Lord Brahma. This is very unique demons. They could do that. They stole it from the mind of Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma, he doesn't know anything anymore. What to do? So he approached Lord Vishnu again and he asked, please teach me the essence of the Veda so I can continue with my knowledge and I can continue with my service. So Lord Vishnu, he taught him the essence of the Veda in 5 nights. So that's why it's called Pancha Ratra. The essence of the Veda that was taught in 5 nights. is called Pancharatra. Now Pancharatra deals with many, many aspects. It deals with jnana, it deals with karma, it deals with bhakti. Mainly, it teaches us how we can approach Krishna without getting deviated in other places like worshipping demigods, being more, materialistic. So that's the essence of the Veda. How to approach Krishna with an unalloyed devotion. So that is the reason our, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's parampara, we follow Pancharatra. And among Pancharatra, we follow the Narada Pancharatra. Narada Pancharatra is basically, is an education given to Narada Muni by Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva, he teaches how to perform Krishna. So this is Pancharatra that we as the Gaudiya Vaishnavas follow. And there is a lot of, there is a very big difference between Karmakanda and Pancharatra. The rituals of it many times looks exactly the same. The difference is the difference in the mood. Karmakanda we perform, as we all know, is for our own personal benefit. But Pancharatra is done for the pleasure of Krishna. The mood is different. You can be chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, but you may chant it for getting material benefit. You cannot say that it is a Bhagavata Vidhi. It's not. It's 100% Karmakanda. Because you are doing it for fulfilling our own personal material desires. So big difference within the Pancharatra and the Karmakanda is the mood. The way how Pancharatra is fashioned is to create that mood. We understand that it is for the pleasure of Krishna. That is the reason we teach it in our Gurukul, as how you can approach Krishna to the best of your capacity, how you can please Him, and how you can receive His mercy and go back home, back to Godhead. It is more in line with the mood of the gopis. Everyone knows the story when Krishna gets a headache. And the only way to get rid of the headache is that some devotees will put the dust of their feet on Krishna's head. Nobody wants to do it. Even the queens of Dwarka refuse to do it. But it's mentioned when gopis heard about it, some of them fainted on the spot thinking that Krishna is suffering from a headache. And then the others who were still conscious, they said, take it. What are you waiting for? He says, but you will go to hell. That's okay. As long as Krishna's headache is being taken care of. That is also the mood that Mahaprabhu is teaching us when he says, in the 8th verse of Shikshashtakam, when he mentions, you can do whatever you want. You can embrace me or don't give me darshan and make me dejected. Whatever you like, you will always remain my master. So that is being also taught through the structure of Pancharatra. Anybody has any questions on this point?
What other Pancharatras are there?
Oh, there are 108 of them. 108 Pancharatras. Yes. So, the way how we, as we mentioned, yes, Mati.
The yajnas and the other things are also part of the Pancharatras.
Yes. Yes. So, deity worship as a whole, the yajna is part of it. The deity worship as a whole is Pancharatra. The way how we teach it to the boys is through the morning pujas, throughout the day, our daily worship, through the yajnas. When you say the difference comes, I'll give an example of how is it different. When it says, let's say we're having a yajna. In the performance of yajna, any karmakandis would just chant the word swaha. Or they will add, let's say if they are doing it for Krishna, they will say, Swaha idam Krishna ya namaha. That's where it ends. But the followers of Pancharatra, they take it further. They say, Swaha idam Krishnaya idam na mama. It's for Krishna, not for me. It's always this point is emphasized. It's not for me. I'm doing it for Krishna. I'm doing it for Srimati Radharani. So it's always for the Lord. So doing it, you start understanding how we can serve Krishna with an unalloyed devotional service. If anybody has any question? Oh, yes?
I heard that some astrologers offer you some pujas to do. What is this category of these pujas?
Some astrologers, Prabhu's question is, some astrologers give you different worships to do. You have, let's say your Surya is weak, you have to perform, you have to offer water to Surya every day in the morning when the sun rises for next 21 days, or you have to do, specific vratas and this and that. That is applicable up to a limit, that much you are not devoted to Krishna. Does that make sense? Means there is a gap between our devotional service and our personal desires. So the more the difference, the more of these things are affected. If you are completely surrendered to Krishna, you don't need to do any of these things. Just performing, just chanting of the Maha Mantra is enough. Because when you say in astrology you have different planets, but once you become a devotee, you take Pancharatrika initiation, which we call it as the first initiation, the second initiation, then all these things, they don't really matter, because that initiation means you are serious about going towards Krishna. So the more you give importance to these things, the more effect does it have. You have devotees who have completely surrendered. For example, what's his name? Jai Singh, the king of Jaipur. He built up the whole Jaipur city to protect Radha Govinda. He created a city to protect him. And so one time he's sitting there, he has said, okay, from this time in the morning, that's my deity worship time. Doesn't matter what happens. So he's sitting there worshipping the Lord. He gets information that the enemies have attacked. He said, bad luck. I'm worshipping Krishna. He doesn't get up. And suddenly, the minister goes out and the king comes running out. He says, okay, let's go kill the enemies. But he says, forget about it. We have to first protect the citizens. That's my, as a king, that's my duty to protect the citizens. He goes out, goes for a war, defeats the whole enemy, comes back, and everybody's is jumping up and down in bliss because they defeated the enemy. And the king comes out again and says, let's go fight the army. Let's go fight the enemy. It's like, we just came back, sir. It's like, what do you mean? I was worshipping the whole time. There was my time of deity worship. So what happened? Krishna, Govinda, he took the form of Jai Singh, came out, defeated the whole army, and went back. So the glory goes to the king. But what he said, okay, I'm not doing anything. I'm just going to be worshipping Krishna. There's another pastime of a devotee called Tukaram in Maharashtra. He was from a Shudra background, but he was following Bhagavad Dharma. He was initiated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his dreams. So he was preaching Krishna consciousness very nicely. And at one point, because he's a Shudra, the Brahmins, they started to say, oh, you cannot preach, you cannot serve the Lord, you cannot enter the temple. So he was banned from coming inside the temple. So he just sat down and he wrote songs on Krishna. And at one point, they would say, you cannot write any more songs. And then they said, okay, but what about thousands of songs he has written till now? He said, all those things with his own hands, he has to throw them in the river named Indrayani. He was devastated. He says, what can I do? The only thing now I can do is to remember the Lord. So he stopped eating, stopped sleeping. The only thing he was doing was remembering. He sat down, he drowned his songs in the river. sat down on the bank of the river, no eating, no sleeping, no talking, nothing. He's just sitting and remembering the Lord. 13 days passed. His wife came, his son came, his daughter came. They said, unless you eat, we are not going to eat. No problem, you can die with me. 13 days, no eating, no drinking, nothing. And on the 13th day, the Indrayani river personified, she comes out with the song and offers it to him. And even today, people, you know, in Maharashtra, they worship him as a great devotee. He is one of those rare devotees who went back to Godhead with his mortal body. Such a great devotee. Like we have another example comes of Dhruva Maharaj. He also didn't leave his body before, you know, going on the airplane. But the funny point is, when he was sitting on the airplane, Tukaram Maharaj, he had friends. They had told him, you are such a great devotee, Krishna himself will come to take you. And the Vimana did come to take him back to Godhead. People are looking at the Vimana. People are seeing the Vimana, you know, him sitting in the Vimana. And he's telling them, my dear brothers, please come. You had asked me to take you back to Godhead. Please come with me. I will take you. The Vimana is here. Just get on. And the first friend says, you know, after 10 years I had a very good yield in my field. I'll just harvest it and then I will come. The second one says, no, no, my daughter is of a marriageable age. I'll first get her married and then I will come. The third one says, no, no, you know, somebody, this happened, something that happened. Nobody went. Nobody went back to Godhead. And they all saw him. You know, the Vimana took off and they saw him going back, home, back to Godhead. So, this is how much of a, how to say, the planets give their influence on Vaishnavas. And you know, you will always see, you know, the lines on your hands keeps on changing when you're performing devotional service. Sri Prabhupada says, just clap in kirtan and the lines of your hands will change. Now, so many devotees sitting here, I'm sure, you were, before you joined Krishna consciousness, you had such a messy life. If you would not have joined Krishna consciousness, you would be in the same place. Maybe better, maybe worse. But because we have all joined Krishna consciousness, we can say that our life is much better than how it was. Right? That is the power of Krishna consciousness on the planets and planetary influences. So, more faith you have in Krishna consciousness, the less effect that the planets give on one's life. Is that okay, Prabhu?
What is Narada Pancharatra?
Narada Pancharatra is Lord Shiva teaching Narada Muni in process of devotional service. That's Narada Pancharatra. Any last question? Yes. Yes, it is Narada Pancharatra. Okay. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Sorry, I forgot to introduce Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu. He came as a student here to the school many years ago. How many years ago?
13
years ago, he came to the school as a student. He stayed in the ashram. He became a teacher. He's one of the most enthusiastic teachers in the school. And we thank his presence. I want to introduce now Yadiraj Prabhu. Yadiraj Prabhu as Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu, he came as a student to the academy. He's been many years here also. 14 years he's in Gurukul. And he's one of the charges of the ashram training, to train the boys in ashram life. And his focus is on the small boys, 5, 6, 7 year old boys. So he'll also explain about this ashram training to all of you.
Okay, so 3 points supposed to talk about. The reason why we teach, okay, I'm a pastime teacher, as we mentioned. So why do we teach boys ashram life? What is the main objective of that subject? And how do we teach that? What's the methods and procedures that we follow? So, So why do we teach boys ashram? So first of all, what's ashram? What does ashram mean? So ashram basically means shelter. It's a shelter. Like the hasta ashram is a shelter. Where the living entity is a situation where the living entity can place himself to educate himself or herself. Brahmachari ashram is also a situation where we educate ourselves. And vanaprastha, sannyas, like that. So that's ashram life. Ashram is a shelter. So it's a shelter for whom? For the living entity. So now the purpose of the ashram painting is just to make the boys happy, to make them satisfied, to give them a tool that they will require in their future lives to be successful. So that is the purpose, that we want the boys to be happy, to be learned, to be educated, to be example for others, you know. Boys will be, some of them will become family men, so they will be someone's husband, they will be someone's father, and they'll have relatives, so they have to become leaders. They have to have a strong value system. They will apply it in their lives, and they will teach others. So then the this process of Varna Ashram is just is Krishna's project to make sure that the living entity will go through life and will make some progress. You know, that will be will have an experience of upliftment. So life doesn't go on vain. So then ashram life, in the ashram we that is the situation in which we are practically teaching the boys this thing. How to behave. For example, we teach the boys what's the world. What is the world? How they should see the world. You know. For example, we have a boy to make it practical. 5-year-old boy. And he doesn't know anything. He just knows that he wants to play, and whatever gives him pleasure, he wants to do that. No. He doesn't know anything, so it's our duty to teach him what is the world. Okay? So what is the sun? What is the moon? What are living entities? What is a father? What is a mother? What is a teacher? What is a brother? What is a younger brother, elder brother, equal? All these things we're supposed to teach the boy. So then, and we teach those things based on what Krishna says, that what these things are. What's the inherent nature of these things? What is the inherent nature of a mother, of a father, of a teacher, what they are, according to Krishna. So our duty is to teach the boys that, to give them impressions. The sense of what is his mother or her mother, or my brother, or the world. So then we start, and it's a simple thing. It's not something that you have to like learn and follow some course in a university. No, it's actually common sense. But we still have to be trained in that. So say for example, you know, we're walking with a boy somewhere. And then we see the sunrise. And then you can just, the boys are just, you know, they're just playing or talking to each other and being spaced out. So the teacher finds a great opportunity to teach the boy now to give him a very Krishna conscious experience. Something that he might not forget in his life. So the teacher will tell the boy, you see the sunrise? It is so nice, right? And then the kid looks and he says, yeah, it's nice. He doesn't know it, he just knows that it looks nice, it feels nice. So then we will explain to him what is the sun, what does it represent, what does it do in the world, what does it do to him, why it is so important in a very Krishna conscious way, and bring it back to Krishna. You know? So sun is a source of knowledge, it's a source of clarity, it's a source of our body. No, it is also the bodies of all the living entities. It's what maintains us, right? It's what gives us identity. So you tell the boy like this, or the girl like that. So then they start getting this these definitions of the whole world in a very Krishna conscious philosophical way that that would ensure that in the future you cannot, as Maharaj said a few days ago, you cannot guarantee anything here. But there is a great probability, a great chance that that this boy, even if in his adolescence he might, you know, get deviated for some years, his the core of his personality is devotional, and then that will manifest eventually. That will come up, and he will remember. Wow, you know, he will remember his nice experiences that he had. This very kind of like a simple moment when he was, you know, standing with his teacher and his teacher told him this, or even the father or the mother. You know, the mother and father are the first teacher. So then ashram life, or the subject of ashram, is important because of this. We're teaching the boys lifestyle. Okay? So how to be clean, how to be sense control, how to be a gentleman or a gentle lady, how to be the devotees. In ashram, the boys learn these things. They learn how to be people. That's what they learn. How to be nice, educated, people first. And then, on top of that, then they become devotees. No? Because you can be a devotee and not be a gentleman. That is possible. But you have a devotee who is a gentleman, then that's very powerful. And that's what Guruji wants to do. We want to create a very powerful gentleman. And Srila Prabhupada actually says that devotee means is a gentleman. So this is why we teach this. Because unless it is ashram life, and then there is not a... There is no, I say, guidelines to live life. So, now get the objectives, the thing mentioned. We just, you know, we want the boys to get the values. And how do we teach this? So, before was explaining about Pancharatra, so that's our lifestyle. So then, we teach this by mainly giving our association to the boys, by being honest with them. So in this is something, there's three things that are very important, the main principles, that a father and mother, or anybody who is taking care of someone, should know. And is that any method or process of physical, sensual, emotional, or intellectual development, one has to be consistent, and one has to be very patient. Those two things are like these two qualities that are, I mean, something that you have to be like that. You have to be consistent. Not that one, you're very serious 1 week and the next week you're not. Or that you want the result to come right now. I want to see, I'm putting so much work into it and I don't see. It won't come like that. And specifically not in education, because it's a field very much, touched by mood of goodness, sattva guna. If sattva guna comes, it will come when it's supposed to come. It's not up to you. So we just perform the duty, the consistency, and we patient, and then the result will come in due course of time. And then one has to have a very clear program. What is it that I want to teach the boys, and how I'm going to do that, how I will do that. So then if it is, for example, the value of purity, you know, like Shao Chong, it's not just cleanliness, it's purity. Then we have to be with the boys in those situations where we're dealing with contamination. When the boys have to get dirty, they actually have to get, we're saying, Gurukul Muchi. Muchi means contaminated. And then we teach the boys practically how to clean themselves from that. So it's a very practical work. It's not something you can teach by giving a class. You can teach the theory of it. But because we're talking about, even the boy's impression, strong impression for the life, is the mind. So the mind works on experience, it's samskara. So they have to be there in a situation, they have to feel it. So then when we're with the boys, for example, we're taking bath, so we teach the boys, you know, what area of the place we're taking bath is the most dirty, and then what is less dirty, and what's less dirty, like that. So then they, you start developing gradually pros in time, the value for these things, so they already know, okay, this is suci, that's pure, and this is not so pure. So you should keep away from impurity. So this is very important. Why? Because the same intelligence that is making a discrimination between something contaminated and something that is pure, it is same intelligence that will be operating when the boy opens the Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavad Gita and he reads the purport. It is same intelligence that will be discriminating. So that boy who knows this, who is able to understand what's not pure, what's impure, he will be able to see things that someone who is not trained like that won't be able to see. So that's why it's so important. Because there is a direct connection between just one's life, practical life, and one's thinking, you know, one's contemplation. So, yeah, so Pancharatra is all about purity, how to purify ourselves from false ego. And the same way, eternal service of Krishna. And then for the boys, we follow in the same process. But it's just that we do it in a way that it's appealing to the little kids. So then, like that, so when, for example, we request some of the parents of these young boys that they should start teaching the boys how, for example, what they do when they wake up in the morning, what's the first thing they should do, that the human being should do. But that's the first thing they do. So when a mother comes and says, okay, now you wake him up, and then what do you do? What do you say now? And your kid wakes up all drowsy and, you know, spaced out. So what do you do? Say, Hare Krishna, your obeisance to Bhumi Devi, you know, to Mother Earth. And like that, so the boys start learning from five, this value. This is a very important thing. They might sound and look so simple, but they're so important. So important. I personally remember my personal realization in my life is that I remember my father. I was probably five, and my father was a pujari. So then he would put this to, he would put in this to rest, and I was there with him, and he would, you know, turn off the lights. Everything was dark. And then I was just there, around, and just playing. And then my father would come and tell me, be quiet, the deities are taking rest. And then I don't forget that. I will never forget that. And that moment, it gives a very powerful samskara in you, you know, as a young kid, where that can already have so much influence in your future life. What will you do with your life? What you wanna be? A devotee or not a devotee? What are your values? Just that little time when your father told you, my father told me this. You know? And then you see, wow, there is a person inside the curtain. There's someone there. And that is Krishna. So in a young and pure mind, innocent mind, that means a lot. It's very powerful because it's not, a boy doesn't have false ego. They don't have, I mean, the ego is there, but the ego is in a state where you can manipulate to get something out of it. Bad or good. And when the person grows up, then the false ego develops, more difficult to manipulate the ego. So when the kid is young, then you can just write on it, on him, whatever you want. You can write nice poetry, or you can write nonsense. And that's what the person will be. He'll be a nonsense person, but he will be can be a very elevated personality. As one sage said, that a young boy is like fresh cement. You know, so you can write anything as long as it's fresh, but when it gets hard, it's just whatever you wrote in it, that won't go. And you have to break it and do so much work. But if you write nice things on it, then it will remain forever like this. So I think, I hope I very clearly explained these 3 points. Anybody has some questions, you can try to. It's fun.
You said that you train them so that later on they become leaders, get married. So how they will learn to face the world? Because here it's called mode of goodness activities. So how do you train to face them in modern Kalyuga and how to do that?
Okay.
Okay,
with good questions. Okay. So Prabhupada is saying basically that for many of the boys, they will grow up to be people, like, you know, responsible members of society. But then, how do we, in Gurukul, it's a very static environment, so how are we preparing them to face the world, which is so, like, heavy and aggressive?
And passion.
Huh? Passion and negligence. Okay. So then, first of all, the most important element of human life is knowledge. Is knowledge, is education. Okay, so knowledge. Knowing what's what. Okay, definition. That's the first principle of the Vastu tribe, you know, the tree, the first one is Sambandha, means knowledge. First you have to have knowledge. So, knowledge can only be acquired in a very successful way in a sattvic environment. If you are in passion, you are in ignorance, you will not learn anything. Or anything is actually that can change your life and that can help you change other people's lives. So then, the best way to prepare yourself for facing the world is sattva-guna. There's no other way. So, yeah, it is difficult to once the boys go out, and for some time maybe, you know, they might have to take some time to understand what's out there, but they are doing it from the platform of sattva-guna. So they are analyzing, they're seeing what's actually there, you know. So then, what enables them to do well, as opposed to a person who didn't go through sattvic training, and then he would just get more. He only went through passion, and then faces passion, then there's more passion, and it comes to him. So if you have someone in goodness, then there's a good chance that, okay, if he faces passion, he might fall to passion, but it is far from anger. But, you know, this is an anecdote from Srila Prabhupada when, I think it was Bhaktisaro Maharaj, Amrindaman, he gave him, like, first and second, or second and sannyas initiations all at once, very fast. And then one of the devotees, senior devotees, he complained to Srila Prabhupada, why you gave this devotee so fast? He's going to fall down. He might fall down. He hasn't get so much training. But Srila Prabhupada knew that this person has a very sattvic background. He knows the background, because Srila Prabhupada himself is from that background. So he said, even if he falls down, even if he does fall down, he will fall to sattva-guna. So, then there's no fall down. So if we train the boys, you know, in a nice environment, with nice association, with a nice program, you know, a Krishna-given program, so then there is a less chance that he will fall down too low. No, there's a chance that he will actually get above the mortal man. There's no question,
John. Huh? Yes, just one thing regarding this. See, the boys in the school, they learn how to deal with situations, whatever is in the school. Don't think that in a Gurukul you don't get thick-headed kids or whatever, all these kind of situations, whatever. You would get in a big world. You get also kids who don't want to do anything and they're very lazy. And then a group leader, he has to deal with it. He has to inspire them. So whatever is in the Gurukul is basically something in the big world outside. The only thing is that here is more controlled. And therefore, because the teacher is there also. Yeah? The teacher will tell the kid, hey, this is not how you talk to your group leader. Straight away. In a big world, the government's supposed to do that, but generally they don't do. But doesn't mean that, you know, we won't be able to deal with it. And, you know, it's obvious, we also learn the sattvic way of dealing with things, but also we do learn martial arts. You will get to know that also. So in case things go out the water, like on the street, and people attack you, of course Krishna is always there, but doesn't mean that, you know, we won't get away from the situation. Like that. So whatever we facing in a big world outside, we do face it in the Gurukul also. So boys, they practice it from the early age. Let's say a boy is coming to the Gurukul in age of 5. Alright, by age of 7, he will be a group leader for, or actually that is the big brother for an age of five-year-old kid. So then he will be already taking care of him, telling him how to do this, how to do that, helping him putting his dote on, helping him how to wash the bowl, what he's eating from, and so on. And when he gets bigger, by age of 18, 19, we had kids who used to organize a Snyder program for the Juggernaut and things like that, some bigger programs. So then you can see at the age of 18, or age of even 15, they actually can do those things. You know, we had a boy, he was 14 years old, he used to cook a feast regularly on the Saturdays because the boys were out for some programs. So then he would cook the whole feast, that's 14, 15 preparations alone. The everything was prepared, cut, and he would cook it alone. That means cooking on 5-6 fires at once. It's not easy, and the fires are not small, and the pots are not small. Cooking for 40 kids or 50 kids, you have to have a pot like this big, maybe like a 10-liter, 15-liter pot. And there's in there maybe, I don't know, like a 10-liter of sabji. And you have to keep moving it, and the big fires are there. And you have to maintain that. And he used to take care of that alone. He was capable. Not everybody can do, of course. Everybody, somebody always exceeds others in a particular field, and he was one of the exceptional boys in that field, but doesn't mean that others, they don't know how to cook. Everybody knows how to cook in a good food. Maybe not going to be great cooks, but they can cook. They're not going to die of hunger, like that. So you can see, everything is being trained, and they, when they step out of the Gurukul, they can do it. So the thing is that if the world cannot take them in, they will create a world which will take them in. So that's how it is. If you cannot get into the situation, then you create a situation where everybody else can get in. That's how it works. That's what Prabhupada did also. Prabhupada didn't go there and became a prime minister or something. He went there, he created a situation, and all the devotees and everybody else came into that situation. He didn't become a part of that big society there. The big society became his part of his society, which is called ISKCON. Yeah?
Yeah. I have one question.
Yes.
Hare Krishna. I have a small boy in the school, and I recognize in him that he really wants to please, especially Yadavaj Prabhu, as his group leader, and more also as parents. So my question is, how do you do this? what is the quality? Do you think it's the quality in the teacher that the disciple or the kids want to please the teacher or the parent?
Okay.
I also have those sons in the Yadarashtra. They also the same teacher. Mm-hmm. They just want to please him.
Okay, so basically, we just try to very honestly care for them. We try to, just spend time with them, you know, and try to, we are menial servants of the boys. That's what we are. That's the beauty of a teacher. He has to become actually a menial servant of that person. And, where there cannot be manifestation of false ego. I mean, the ego is almost there, but one has to be able to control that, to be able to be with the person, to have the control, the sensitivity, and all that. And I think the one thing that one can focus on to try to fix one mind to do these services. Today in the class, the Bhagavatam class, it was mentioned the verse from the Bhagavatam that says that you cannot become a father or a mother or a teacher unless you are willing or you are actually trying your best. Or the verse says, unless you know that you're going to take them back to Godhead, you cannot do this. Don't say that. Otherwise, you're not being responsible. So, that's basically the purpose that you meditate that, okay, I am responsible, I have to take up this service as with the mood that I am responsible for these souls, I have to take them back to Godhead. Or at least, in a very good percentage, help them to get there. And then with this attitude, then these things will align to that. You know, they will just take, you know, you'll be just guided to do it. So, but in this to make it simple, you really just really spending time with them, serving them, appreciating them as devotees, because they're actually devotees. You know, they are not. They may be your son, maybe a student, but they're actually Krishna's paraphernalia. And they come here to just like in the deity room, we have paraphernalia, sits there, and it's so important for the deity worship, right? Without paraphernalia, we can't worship Krishna. But we are the ones who have to deal with the paraphernalia. We have to wash it, clean it, polish it, keep it nice, so we can bang it out of shape. We can keep it nice. So we have to, we just serve in the paraphernalia. So that is the idea. If someone has, someone got this, the service of teacher, then it has to, you know, that I am dealing with Krishna's paraphernalia. It has to be in a very peculiar way. Or if it is a father or mother, then the same way. The kids, but that actually Krishna's not supposed to take care of this devotee because they are meant to do something special in the future in this movement. So I think that's kind of like in general mentality.
I just want to add to Prabhu's, because I know he would not express his own qualities. Mataji is asking, I know. So one thing that everyone in Gokul knows is Yadiraj Prabhu's humbleness. Very humble. And the kids, they feel it. Humbleness and love. Love is also bhakti. He treats the children with love. And this love comes in two ways. Affection and discipline. Children, when they get discipline from someone who loves them, they appreciate. So he disciplines the children. He gives some chastisements to the children. It's not that. It's only the humbleness and the love. So these things are also in his quality. If you can discipline and give the affection, the small children, they will do whatever you ask them to do. That's the secret. And Prabhu is an embodiment of that. So.
Consistency. Consistency.
Consistency, yeah.
Explain maybe a little bit of consistency. Explain a little bit. Consistency. What is consistency?
We didn't. Yeah.
He did?
Yeah. He did.
Okay.
I think we should. Yeah, okay.
So, what is the daily schedule for the Gurukul birth or the daily routine from the morning to.
Yeah. I'll ask Madhama Shai to explain that. Because Prabhu has to go also. Because the children are there waiting for him. So he has to go. So I'll just introduce Bhadev Mashai also. He came as a student to the school. How many years ago, Mashai?
11.
11 years ago, he came as a student. Now he is not only a teacher, but he's one of the principals of the school. He manages the school. We have the deans of the school. That's Priti Vardhan Prabhu, Madhav Goranga Prabhu. But they don't do the managerial service. They are the deans. They are counselors for all of us. And Bhadra Mashai is one of the principals of the school. And beside that, he's also a teacher. So he specifically teaches mathematics to the children. But
you can, so should I answer that question?
Yes, yeah, and then.
So, basically, the schedule starts with the boys. They wake up early morning at 2 o'clock, and they perform little menial service. They clean the place where they were sleeping, and they clean the area and the campus. Then, at around 3 o'clock, they have japa class, so they chant their japa before Mangalarki. Then, certain boys, they perform deity worship. They perform puja. Yagya happens at the same time, and the other boys who do not have their qualification, they attend Mangalarti in the temple. Then at 5:15, we have assembly for the whole school. We have deity darshan, which ends some invocation mantras for the deities. And we have assembly with the deans of the academy, with the teachers, and with all the students to set the mood for the day, to discuss certain matters. We read Srila Prabhupada's Lilamrita and discuss certain points from there. And then after that, boys, they have morning service where all the areas of the school are being cleaned and tidied up. Then we have first block of 2 periods. The first period is philosophy class for all ages, Some boys, they do darshan chakshu, some boys do bhakti shastri, some boys, smaller boys, they do philosophy class in the form of stories and Mahabharata and Ramayana. Then the next period, they have Sanskrit. After Sanskrit class, then we have kitchen service. Everyone is preparing for breakfast, cutting up subjects for lunch. Then we have breakfast. After breakfast, we have another block of academic subjects, which are math and English. Then after that, boys do noon service, which includes taking care of the goshala. They wash their clothes, they wash pumps. And part of the boys, during that time, they cook lunch. Then after that, boys clean the kitchen. And cooks who are cooking, they wash their clothes, take bath. Then we have lunch. Then after lunch, they have a little bit of free time. Then they have quick afternoon service. They tidy the place up. And then from 3 to 4 we have martial arts class, and the younger boys, they do PE class or yoga. And we have then another section of philosophy classes for the older boys. We have another reading class for the younger ones. And then the last class is mantra. The whole school, they learn mantras. And then at that point, then the day students, they will go home, and the ashram boys, they will put the deities to rest, and they have half an hour to wind down, read, and take association of each other, of the teachers, and then they take rest, they go to bed.
What time the day students come?
Day students come from Mangalarti to the temple. So should we talk about math?
Yeah, can speak about math.
So,
for those who didn't get yet the brochures.
Can I have one book?
Yes, for sure.
In the water pot, it's on the back, or put on the back. If you want some water, you can walk. So, apart from character training, which was explained by Yadavashvili very nicely, he also mentioned that in the world, knowledge has certain value. So, mathematics as a subject matter and as part of our life has quite a significant value in our world, whether it's modern world or whether it's world within Krishna consciousness. We still, in this world, we deal with matter and we deal with different aspects of practical life. So Srila Prabhupada wanted everyone to be literates and numerates. So our aspect, our main focus with mathematics is to give the most necessary and the key aspects and principles of mathematics, which include dealing with numbers, that everyone should be very comfortable with numbers. Everyone should understand that. See, the math is actually a very broad subject. It's not just numbers. Math includes such knowledges as Vastu, as astrology, astronomy. And therefore, from a young age, boys, they start learning how to deal with numbers, how to understand different directions, and how the world works in somewhat of a mechanical way. Now, our main objective with mathematics is to make sure that they understand what principle is behind certain method or behind certain application. When I was now remembering, when I was learning mathematics in the school, I had an excellent teacher. But now looking back, I have a feeling that it wasn't really explained to us why we learn it and how we're going to use it. It was just that, you know, you have a checklist and you have to go through it. And I had a feeling that even though the teacher was expert, that she also didn't really know why she is teaching it. is just because she had to as a teacher. There was a program designed by government and so on. And when I started teaching math, because we had quite a few boys who were born in Mayapur, who grew up in Mayapur, and they were not in any way influenced or pressurized by this modern educational machine. So, in a way, there was a challenge, because when I tried to teach them something, they would ask, why do we need to know that? And I, in my life, I never actually thought about it, why? So I had to have a really serious thought process to actually find out why and then convince that person. Because if you just keep telling him no because you're supposed to, then okay, he will do it, but it won't be of any value to him. So then we find a practical application of how certain principles can apply. For example, why do we need to know multiplication and division? So okay, how many bricks do you need to construct this hut? So if he doesn't know, he's going to go and count every single brick, which will take him half an hour. But if he does know the principles of multiplication and addition, within, you know, 30 seconds, he will tell you how many bricks he will need. So explaining things like that, then they very quickly understand and it becomes of a value to them. So this is actually one of the key principles, because the principle of mathematics, whether it's presented in a Vedic way or modern way, is the same. It's coming from Krishna and you cannot change that. But the presentation can be quite different. So in Gurukul, we always try to connect things to not only practical things that boys do in the school, but to practical and spiritual aspects. How they're going to use it in cooking, how they're going to use it in deity worship, how they're going to use it in their daily life, how they add numbers. See, one of my realization was that math as a subject also develops a certain way of thinking. How you deal with numbers, how you deal with knowledge, you learn the principle of understanding the knowledge. Then, across all the subjects, you can take a look that if someone's book is neatly organized, then there's a very big chance that his locker and his personal belongings will be organized in the same way. So, whether they learn to organize their locker first, and then they learn how to write neatly, or they learn how to write neatly, and then they apply the same principle in taking care of their day, of their life, it is the same. So we're trying to always remember what, like Yadav Prabhu was explaining, what we're trying to teach the boys, and together with practical knowledge of mathematics, which is our, which our world is made out of, because we, you know, we deal with money, we deal with finances, we travel, we deal with time, we deal with matter, with different objects, and many other aspects, then how that connects to the same principle of being a devotee of Krishna, of being spiritual. Then, also, we try to find very individual approach to every student. Just like our philosophy is so broad that it can, we can always find an expert preacher, he'll always find an angle through which to approach and present certain point. In the same way with mathematics, we don't have a, you know, cut and ready script or formula how the boys are being educated. It's done on a very, very individual, individual basis. As far as the class goes, different levels, they're being taught in, with different methods. Smaller boys, they require pretty much one-on-one attention and a lot of repetition. Whether the older boys, they have already learned the principles of how class is being run, what is expected of them, so they have much more freedom. And we're running more of a tutor system where they self-study within, according to the textbook, and the teacher is there to guide them and to explain them different different aspects and different methods how to acquire this certain knowledge, certain principle. Are there any questions on that? Yes, Prabhu.
All the different levels, same subject is
taught at a particular spot. That means like all the teachers are acquainted with all the subjects.
Sorry?
The particular subject is taught in the same spot for all the levels.
A particular subject
is the same topics are all the way through, just more elaborate, or you have different topics for each line?
See,
actually, Prabhuji told,
yes,
see, suppose math, so all level maths are same time, and the children of different caliber will sit in different class. So he's asking, if that is the case, it means everybody knows math.
Everyone, see, the math is taught, we have certain levels of mathematics. Right now, I think we have 4 levels. And everyone fits within that level according to their level of knowledge. Now, certain principles and certain topics of math, they are reintroduced again, but from a more elaborate perspective, but some are not. For example, trigonometry is only being taught for the senior boys. It's not being taught for the medium. Or medium boys might learn some aspects of trigonometry, starting what an angle is, and, you know, what different things are like that. But then in the senior level, it will all be put together. But yes, it is, you could say that is accumulative over the levels. Yes.
Can I speak first?
Yes. So, introduce also Vagesh Mashai. He came as a student how many years ago?
I don't know, many.
Many years ago.
Some 20 years or
something. 20 years ago or something. So he was a student, now he's a teacher. He worked a lot in many of the curriculum materials we have in the school. And he's also a Sanskritist. And he'll speak about the languages in the school, how they are taught.
Okay, so basically language, what is language? That's basically the first thing is. So then, it was created for a particular reason. The reason is, Rasashvarani Krite, Basha Utpanna. So the language was created for relishing relationship. Okay? And relationship means between Krishna and his devotee. So basically to express our love to Krishna in words, on poetry, then language is created. That basically what is the source of it, or what is the need of it. That's the purpose of it. Okay, I want to put it such a way so not too complicated. I try to make it very simple because language is a material science, and other thing is a very, very complicated science. But it has very simple principles. So basically, why we actually teach the language in the Gurukul is to understand and analyze Shastra. English or Sanskrit or Bengali. We are teaching actually 3 languages. English, Bengali and Sanskrit. We teach all the 3 languages the same way. Same up to the fine details, basically. We're teaching according to Jiva Goswami's Harinamamrita Vyakarana. I don't know if anybody heard about it. There's a book called Harinamamrita Vyakarana. It is written in Sanskrit language by Jiva Goswami. And then it gives the principles of Sanskrit and gives also the details how Sanskrit works into fine details, basically. And then we're using the same system. We took the whole book into shreds, into principles. And then based on those principles, he created 2 other Vyakarana books called the Harinamrita Vyakarana, Harinamrita Bangla Vyakarana in Bengali and the Harinamrita English Vyakarana for English. Based on the same system. If you look at the books, they go into the same amount of chapters, the same breakdown, the name of the terms are the same. Everything is the same, basically. So, why is it important to be same? Somebody could ask. One thing is it's consistent with the system of Jiva Goswami given us. Other thing is that to take one language and convert it into another language is very fast. Because we have the same system in both sides. Let's say, for example, we have a word, Gamana. Okay? That's a Sanskrit word. It's basically the same meaning in Bengali. Isn't it? Yeah. Asking a Bengali gentleman, he knows a good Bengali. So, that made from a root, gam, to move. And then you have a suffix, ana. In English, the ana suffix is called bhavavache or verbal form, or called, yeah. So then that is going to be in English called bent. Okay, so we put gam, ana together, it's going to be in English, move, ment. So you can see, one system directly corresponds to the other system. Sometimes it doesn't exactly go like that. Of course, you could say move, gam means can be go also, not only move. And then you can say go ment. So you have to find the right word for it. But within a little bit of thinking, a little bit of like a common sense, we can easily put it together, movement. So the same way, that's why we teach this way. And this system is given by Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami was the topmost scholar in the world. They say past, present, future, they say. He was trained by the five Goswamis. And Mahaprabhu and so on. So, if you look at the book, it was very intelligently put together. Very, very intelligently. The system how he put it together is just way beyond anybody else's kind of thinking. Like that. Slightly different from the Western method, but it can be translated to each other. For example, there's a principle of visheshana, which is different from Western. Western we call visheshana, they call it adjective. But then Jiva Goswami says visheshana is not just an adjective. Visheshana is something which is giving a quality to something. Yeah? Adjectives, they do give quality to a noun. What about verbs? They call adverbs. Okay? So the adverbials are also visheshanas, but they call them kriya visheshanas. Adjectives for verbs. So like that. So there is a little bit difference within the two systems, the modern system and the Vedic system. But the Vedic system immediately includes everything. It easily covers all the things whatever the Western system does. So everything is covered whatever we see in the big world. Somebody might ask, can the kids understand whatever happening in the big world? Yes, of course. In fact, they can understand it more. Why? Because for Shastric study, what is the other purpose of Sanskrit Shastric study? So for that you have to be able to understand down to the root of the word. In the language there are two things actually. There's only roots, verbal roots, and affixes. Yeah? Even nouns are created from roots. Verbal roots. Verbal roots basically describing an action. What activity something does. Okay, so how this works? This is basically comes back to creation, where the whole thing actually starting from. Krishna's creation. When Krishna creates something, he gives his name to him and gives his function to it. Let's say you have Krishna create a holder. Okay. This one is holding the microphone. Okay, so Krishna creates holder. So it's coming from the root, hold. What is going to do? He must hold. His name is holder, so he must do the activity of holding. Then, it's made with the suffix er, yeah? That so became a noun. So this noun is something which is going to do the activity of holding. Why is it important? Because we're not going to use it for plowing the field. We're not going to using it for, I don't know, putting a book on it. Because all is supposed to hold, but it's a microphone holder, so if you put a book on it, book may be heavy, it may break. That is going against its karma, against its dharma. I hope you can connect the points together, yeah? Creation, Krishna creates is a duty for it, that is his dharma. If you go against his dharma, that means you doing an aparad, an offense. Yeah? Because you're not doing it how you're supposed to be doing it. Not using it how Krishna created it to be used. That's going against dharma. So this word, the culture, and the language meet. Where Krishna is a creation, Krishna is a life, or Krishna is the environment, or Krishna is dham and devotees, and our day-to-day life meet. So it is not just a language. This is Krishna's language. It becomes Krishna's culture. When we speak English, we're going to speak according to Krishna's culture. We understand it according to Krishna's culture. This is called a seat. Why? Because you're supposed to sit on it. Okay, that's basically, it creates your situation where you can perform your activity. Asana means where you can exist. Exist means perform Krishna's service. When you do the deity worship, you have to sit on the asana. You can't just do deity worship by not being on asana. Why? Because asana is representing the holy realm. Holy realm means where you can perform the activity. You're not going to be able to worship Krishna without being situated in the holy realm. That is asana sthapana. That's first step in deity worship. So this kind of things, this is where the culture and the language meets together. And the same thing is being presented in Srila Prabhupada's purports. Sometimes we just did, oh yeah, such and such, this and this, this and this. It's not just this and the Prabhupada actually was putting so much endeavor. A lot of thinking to use the right word, the right phrase. Let's say make a point on this. The living entities are suffering in the material world. Okay, so this is a Kartari Vach, Kartari Prayoga, we call it in the technical language, active voice, where the subject is one who actually performing the activity. So here, the living entities are suffering. Now, what about if you reverse the sentence and going to say, the material world is a place of miseries for the living entities. So it became Adhikarana Vach, a locative voice. So location of the activity is a subject. Location where the living entities are suffering is a subject. Now, what is the difference? Because somebody can say one is Kartari Prayoga, one is Adhikarana Prayoga. That's the difference. No, the point is that here, first sentence, the living entity is defined. Second place, the material world is defined. Why that is important? Because when Srila Prabhupada begins his purport, any purport, you can choose any purport in anywhere, any book. They're going to define things, sambandha, connections, defining everything. This is the material world, this is the living entity, this is the devotion service, this is the liberation. Yeah? So living entity will be liberated from the material world by performing devotion service. That is the body. Step by step, Srila Prabhupada is going to explain all those things, how the living entity is being liberated from the material world by performing devotion service. And on the end, Srila Prabhupada will conclude with a word, thus, therefore, in this way, or there are a few more words like that. You can check every single purport, it will be like that. They're going to say, in this way, the living entity is liberated from the material world. The vehicle, the project is complete. The aims are reached. That was his aim. Now this one brings up the other point of language, which is the two-directional function of it. One we call language, and other one we call it logic. Let's say we want to describe, the child comes to you and says, oh, mommy, I want to know what is the moon. I heard about moon and it's very beautiful. Yeah? So then, you're going to think of the moon, oh, moon is over there, between the branches, and then you're going to start describing. So what you think, okay, the moon is there, connected to that branch, that is a tree, and tree is in that direction. That's what you thought. That is logic. When you're going to explain it, you're going to say, okay, son, listen, I explain you where is the moon and how to see it, and then you will understand what is the moon. Look towards that tree there. There's a tree there behind you. Kid, look at the tree. See, when it goes up, if we have a branch which is coming out to the left side. You see? Yes, I see. You keep going on that branch when there's a next branching off there. You see that big reddish, yellowish circle? Yes, that is the moon. So what happened here? You go from sambandha or definitions, what is the tree, branch, up to the prayojana, the moon. In logic, you go out of the way. You first think, okay, that is a progen. How to get to the progen? This is the process. What I have to define for it? That is sambandha. So this is basically what we teach the kids. This way they can understand Shastra. That is our purpose. Of course, if they're going to go to the bank and want to open an account and they say, okay, so these are the terms and conditions of the program, the bank account, and they read it, oh my God, these guys want to cheat me here. It's cheating. It's only saying half of the sentence. It gives an open conditional clause. The clause is not complete. That means something is missing from it. That means anything can happen. They didn't define it. They didn't define it, you see? They want to cheat me. Or, in an ashram situation, hey, did you clean this, did you clean the house? The prasadam house? Oh, I did finish my cleaning service. No, I'm asking you, did you clean the ashram, the prasadam house? No, I didn't. So what did you do then? Oh, I was helping my friend, you know, cleaning a little bit there in the front of the ashram, front of the house. No, but what was your service? Wasn't it to clean the house? Yes, it was. So why didn't you clean it? Okay, I'm going. Immediately catch it. Why? Because he's thinking that way. This is a logical way of language. This is the system of language. That's how we teach the system. And we get into really up to the words. I wanted to bring a word, like a funny word, like umbrella or something, but I'm going to bring some other word which is more common to our understanding. Let's say academy. Okay. But usually I bring this one because it's very easy to connect to. It's very funny also. So A means not. Okay, A means not. Ked means being caddish. Caddish means being crazy, create catastrophe, make problems. That's called caddish. When kid is caddish, means doing something nonsense. And Emmy is a place where. So academy is a place where train somebody not to be caddish, not to be crazy. That is called academy. And actually this word was coined by Plato, the Greek philosopher. He came up with this word, and why he came up with this word? Because the two things to knowledge. One is the knowledge itself, another is culture. And the two things has to be together. If it's not going together, then it's going to make Einstein who was going to blow out the world. Of course, Einstein did so many nice things also, but he did create the nuclear bomb, which people, they blew up, many people died because of that. So it can be misused. So how we can prevent that knowledge is misused? By culture, by character. And if we can get Krishna's culture, then we go back to Godhead also. Not just we're not going to do something crazy, but actually we do go back to Godhead. Because you see, every single thing in connection with Krishna, whatever we see, is always going to be used how Krishna intended it to be used, according to Krishna's dharma, or Krishna, according to the item's dharma, how Krishna commanded it. And we immediately understand that by just function of it, understanding the object, understanding its name, understanding its situation, what it is in, and based on that we always act properly. And then if we're acting properly, we'll go back to Godhead. Acting in Krishna consciousness, by seeing Krishna's energy in there, we go back to Godhead. That is basically what the last 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita talks about. Seeing Krishna everywhere. He is a taste of water, he is Himalayas because they are unmovable. Yeah, Himalayas, nobody moves in Himalayas except Krishna, of course, when there's an earthquake. But beside that, nobody goes there and moves the Himalayas around. That's a really unmovable thing. And then the veins, the rivers of Krishna's veins, and so on and so on. There's so many cheating of the cheaters, the strength of the strong people, and so on. So we can see Krishna's energy. And that's basically what we actually want to get with this subject. Like that. I didn't talk about what are the parts in there. Okay, time is short. All right, then sure. Leave the parts. Anybody has some questions or comments, then please.
Yes, Mataji. Language can teach some negative or positive, you know. For example, if a mother yells to the son, the son straight away copy that yelling of, you know, negative emotion in that.
Yeah.
That's also language. So what do you speak about this?
Okay, so basically it is Mataji was mentioning that, you know, the language is also including the intonation, the tone, how you speak, and so on, because the children will copy that. If you're going to scream at the child, then the child will be copying that. This whole thing is a package. It's all connected to this. Actually, language is one of the Vedangas, out of the six. And then it is part of a bigger tree. We already talked about it on Thursday, I think, about the different tree of the trees, the branches of the Vedic tree. So it's all going to go together as a student is studying. It all goes as a package. It has a negative effect. That's why we have to learn the culture with it. As I mentioned, you have a culture and the science. So it goes together both, so then you won't get the negative effect. To avoid the negative effect, we have to go according to the culture. We wouldn't necessarily scream to the kid unless there's a Shasta says. It means in a situation where there's a pain, or there's a surprise, or there is a some information has to be given to somebody until it's gotten. For example, the child comes to mother and says, "Mommy, mommy, 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 mommy," until you turn her yes. Even then it goes on, keep going a few more times. then he say, "Yes, how can I, you hungry?" "Yes, I'm hungry." You know? So we can use loud voice or even repetition, but it has a context when it can be used and how it should be used. So we can scream at the kid sometimes. We do scream. Somebody's in danger, you scream at them, they wake up immediately run away from them. "Stop!" Then he stops. "Come back." But we wouldn't be yelling and chastising the kid like that. I've never seen it. We do that. Very rare it happens when kids are really, really... it doesn't get to his head, then we use loud voice. But they're usually only once or twice. And like, "Stop! Think a little bit." You know, we use first initial voice is very loud. Then after you go back to low. Then they stop and they think. So we use these kind of things.
So that like means that. In your teaching is no emotion in between that communication.
Sometimes there is, sometimes there is no. It has to be. See, the thing is that all these things, all these aids, we call them, or tools, are used very needed according to culture. So when emotion is needed, we give emotion. When emotion doesn't need it, we don't give emotion. Kids, they understand that emotion is needed. Kids, they understand the situation. They also learn by practicing also. By we doing it, they copy it and they practice it also, same way. That's why we say that consistency is very important, that the teacher does one thing, the student will follow the same. The parents do one thing, the student will follow the same, they copy it. So we have to always teach properly, we always have to behave how Krishna wants us to behave. Basically, in authority, there's two elements. One is that we demand from the person, other thing we have to provide. But in either case, it comes back to we representing Krishna. How Krishna would act in this situation? If you would be Krishna, how Krishna would do it? Would he give him a slap? Or would we just tend to wait a second, sit down, and let me explain you this? Okay. Yes? Go ahead.
Just briefly introduce also, Subhaksha Mashai, he also came as a student to Gurukul, how many years ago, I think? 25 years ago, he came as a student, he's still in Gurukul.
Still a student.
Yes, no. He also serves many positions in Mayapur. Presently, he's the chair member of the Mayapur Managerial Board. He's also the manager of the MCS. And by Krishna's grace, he's also teaching Gurukul and instructing all of us. So, Mashaya will speak something about philosophy and how we teach philosophy in Gurukul. Thank you.
So, thank you, Pranana Prabhu, for organizing this program and facilitating and giving us a little formula on how to conduct this presentation. So Pranana Prabhu has sent me a WhatsApp message basically asking that we explain in a short time, 20 minutes, the why, what and how of Gurukul Shastric, our philosophical studies. So it's a relatively short time. So I was thinking while Vakisha Prabhu was speaking of what would be the a short, a concise thing. I think I would be meaningful to all of you if you can take away from this short presentation some good deep understanding of what Bhaktivedanta Academy is trying to accomplish as far as philosophical education is concerned. So there's a little line which was given to me by a friend on the way here, Anton Vipubu. I met him. He asked me where I'm going, and he gave a good suggestion. Basically, a gurukul primarily trains the students how to live philosophy, not simply teaches philosophy. I think that is an important thing to remember when you think about a gurukul education. It is not simply meant for teaching philosophy. It is meant for training students on how to live philosophy. And this idea is very much at the heart of Gaudiya Vaishnav theology, Gaudiya Vaishnav philosophy. We are not armchair philosophers. We are sadhaka, isn't it? We hear the instructions of the scriptures through the mouth of the guru, and we apply them in our lives for the purpose of self-realization. So that is a basic idea. Gurukul is about living the philosophy of Bhagavad. It's a gurukul, a Bhagavad gurukul. It is a gurukul which specifically focuses on teaching of Bhagavad philosophy. And therefore, sometimes internally when we speak and discuss, we call this school as a Bhagavad gurukul. Each gurukul has its different specializations, isn't it? At least traditionally you would go to gurukul and you would study different things. So you could go to gurukul to study Kavya, or to study Ayurveda, or Jyotish. There are different gurukuls which used to specialize in particular Vidya. So this school specialization as such is Bhagavad philosophy. So living the philosophy is the primary way of teaching the philosophy. If you know something, if you learn something, you not necessarily can do it, isn't it? But if you can do it, you know it, isn't it? So that is the basic idea, living the philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, in summary, as far as the 3 points Prabhu mentions, why do we teach Bhagavad philosophy? Why do we teach Vaishnava philosophy in the Gurukul? Well, because we firmly believe that this is the topmost knowledge a student, a human being can receive. There is nothing higher than Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. So therefore we teach it here as a primary subject, most important subject, main subject. All the other subjects are simply there to help in learning this particular science. What do we teach? Well, I've already touched upon that. We teach the philosophy of Bhagavad. Obviously, Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy is the technical term of our philosophy, but the approach taken here in the school is to Srimad Bhagavatam. Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy taught to Srila Prabhupada's Bhaktivedanta commentaries on Srimad Bhagavatam. And how do we teach it? Well, I will take a little bit more time to try to explain it to you. So we will start with some simple discussion of understanding knowledge. Knowledge, generally speaking, just like in the English language, we have several synonyms for the term knowledge. We can say awareness, information, knowledge, wisdom, etc. Same idea. I don't think I can explain the tractor. Same idea in Sanskrit. There's many, many different words which can be used to describe knowledge. So for the purpose of this particular discussion, we will use or focus on three particular terms: agyana, or ignorance, lack of knowledge; jnana, or knowledge; and vijnana, or wisdom, realized knowledge. So the idea of the philosophy courses and idea of living the philosophy of Srimad Bhagavata at the Gurukul is to come to the platform of vijnana, realized knowledge. We strive to create an environment in which the student can realize the teachings of his divine grace, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And they deeply understand them. They are given opportunity firstly to hear those teachings. They are given opportunity to contemplate his teachings. And they are given opportunity to realize his teachings. So a philosophy in itself, just like the Gurukul, has its objectives, has its methodology, has its systems. A philosophy itself also has a particular purpose, which is very, very important to keep in mind while discussing a educational system or methodology used for accomplishing a particular goals in a subject. So I would like to quote Srila Prabhupada. Explanation of the purpose of philosophy. Asammoha, freedom from doubt and delusive, can be achieved when one is not hesitant and when he understands the transcendental philosophy. Slowly but surely he becomes free from bewilderment. Nothing should be accepted blindly. Everything should be accepted with care and with caution. So here Srila Prabhupada very nicely summarizes the pedagogy or system and the purpose of studying philosophy. So philosophy is meant to help us become free from doubt and delusion. So the purpose of teaching philosophy in the Gurukul is very much the same. How to help the students become free from doubt and delusion. Freedom from doubt and bewilderment, delusion. So, philosophical thinking, creating a philosophical thinking within the students, giving the students ability to become free from the doubt. In performance of sadhana, in practice of philosophy, a doubt is a big obstacle. In execution of devotional service, doubts are great obstacles. We cannot become absorbed in devotional service. We cannot attain the stage of perfection as long as our mind is besieged with doubts. Isn't it? It's impossible. The doubt is the function of intelligence. Samsha, one of the functions of intelligence. Actually, this. Somebody never doubts anything. Generally, we would say he's not very intelligent, eh? Naive, or simple-minded. Intelligent means he will question, he will doubt. But the problem with it is that as long as the intelligence and not soul governs the existence of a person, then one cannot become fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness. And one also, one cannot. One will always rationalize one's existence. And one cannot become fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness. The stage of samadhi, as Srila Prabhupada describes, it cannot be attained as long as the intelligence is active, isn't it? However, the intelligence is very, very important also while developing in Krishna consciousness and while growing as a devotee. Why? Because with the help of intelligence, Srila Prabhupada explains, we can control the mind. Intelligence is superior to the mind. So the mind can be controlled with the help of intelligence, and when the mind is controlled, one can absorb oneself in the regulated devotional service. One can become fixed and steady, and one can progress very, very nicely towards the ultimate, the goal of life. So, one can address somebody, one can ask somebody to think, to be thoughtful, to become free from doubt, but simply ordering somebody to do so will not work. Intelligence has to be trained. One's thinking methods need to be trained. They should not be left to a chance or to a speculation. When we are not trained how to think properly, we will be speculating. When we are trained how to think properly, we will not be speculating. We will engage in inquiry about the absolute truth. So, what is that proper mode of thinking? Proper mode of thinking is a progressive mode of thinking. Yeah? An intelligent person, at least in outside of the academic world, is considered a person who can get things done. Yeah? A person who can recite a dictionary by heart, maybe a person with good memory. But if he cannot get tight his own shoe, or he cannot do a simple beneficial activity, we would generally not say that he's very intelligent, isn't it? An intelligent person means a somebody who can do something. And somebody who can do something means somebody who has a realization. He has the third cognitive, he attains the third cognitive level, the level of vigyan, of realization. So that is also very nice, the proper way of thinking. A progressive way of thinking is very nicely described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The student is to read facts with view to create and not with the object of fruitless retention. Students, like satellites, should reflect whatever light they receive from the authors and not imprison the facts and thoughts, just like magistrates imprison the convicts in jail. Thought is progressive. The author's thoughts must have progress in the reader in the shape of correction and development. So this is another important concept. A related concept, that studying philosophy has that very particular idea in Vedic system of education. A philosophy is meant to bring progress and correction to the students. And obviously we know what progress and correction means, especially in the term of philosophical understanding, means becoming free from delusion. Yes? Progress means I'm thinking I'm my body, I'm this body. When I understand I'm not this body, I made a progress. I'm free from delusion. Correction means I have anarthas because this false concept of who I am. How do I become corrected? By understanding I'm not this body and giving up those anarchics. So again, it comes back to that very simple idea we discussed at the beginning, leaving the philosophy, allowing this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, of Bhagavata, to change and reshape the lives of the students. So, this proper progressive thinking, that's what we try to inspire in the students, firstly, to be progressive people in life. To be people who have some higher purpose in life, who have a goal in life, whose existence has some meaning and purpose. If that happens, their life and thinking naturally will be progressive. However, as we said before, unless a proper system or framework of thinking is given, they may be a progressive people, but they will be speculators, isn't it? So the idea is to give to the students a proper framework of thinking, a proper system of thinking. And that's the system of philosophy which is being taught in philosophy courses. So that is known as a tattva darshan in Sanskrit, a philosophy. Tattva means a category, means a system, means you analyze a reality in a certain way. And there's many systems which are given for that purpose. A simple, traditional breakdown of the total of reality is Sat Chit Ishvara. So it's a system the students are taught, yes? One of the systems which are taught in philosophy. You have Sat. You have the eternal. You have Sat. You have the spiritual potency. You have Achit. You have the material energy, and you have Ishvara. And the person who studies philosophy will think, okay, these are the three categories, the three tattvas are there, isn't it? Spiritual, material, and God. And there I am. How do I fit in there? Where do I want to be? How do I get there? Philosophy, a system, way of developing a certain way of thinking about oneself, thinking about this world, thinking about God, etc. Bhagavad Gita, a system, an introduction to Bhagavad Gita, a philosophical system for thinking about reality. Ishvara, Jiva, Praktiki, Kala and Karma, the five elements, the five topics of Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada. So anything is there in Bhagavad Gita. In Bhagavad Gita can be analyzed in terms of this five. It's a system for understanding the reality as presented in Bhagavad Gita. Sambandha Videya Prayotana, a Vedantic system, a system given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Relationship, a goal or purpose, and process, how to attain that goal. A system, a way of thinking. So I think I'm reaching the end of my presentation. So there is, just to close down, so the systems are being given to the students. They taught a different way, a scriptural way of thinking. Yeah? It's very, very important to understand that the knowledge itself is of course of utmost importance, but the way you study and analyze the knowledge is just as important. So therefore always you have the Shrutis and Smritis, isn't it? You have the Shruti, you have the transcendental philosophy, and you have the Smriti, you have the application, the culture of that transcendental philosophy. And when you combine the two of them, then you get some wonderful results. The wonderful result in this particular case of studying Bhagavad philosophy is absolute surrender to the lotus feet of Sri Guru and Gauranga, and as a result of that, self-realization and so on and so forth. So going back to Gurukul and going to that opening stage, that yes, we need philosophy and how to make philosophy practical, yeah, because any subject good learning means you have to make it practical, you have to apply it. We all know it. You cannot just sit and hear something and remember something and then say you know it. You know it when you can do it. So in the Gurukul, just like in a normal place, you have a student has a book, has a pencil, has an eraser, so he writes his thoughts, and then if he makes his mistakes, he erases. In the Gurukul, at least in my experience, the best friends of the student is the broom and the floor cloth. The broom is like a pencil, you write your thoughts with. The red is like an eraser, you erase your misconceptions with. And that's much of the philosophical training in the Gurukul, very much connected with the menial service, ashram life. Practically speaking, living philosophy means living an ashram life, just like many of you. I mean, all of you, I guess, are here in the ashram, the Brahmacharya ashram or Grihastha ashram, or maybe Vanaprastha ashram. Or other ashrams, possibly. But we live in the ashram, so the ashram is the application of philosophy, isn't it? So the philosophy, practically applied philosophy, means living an ashram life. Living an ashram life. Philosophy says, you are not this body, you are a servant of Krishna. How you apply it? Well, you perform your ashram duties. That's how you apply it, that's how you understand, that's how you realize. Therefore, the ashram life and the philosophical courses are very, very closely connected and implement each other. Yes, it's very difficult to understand or realize a philosophy without practice, without ashram life. And it's very difficult to continue ashram life and ashram practices without sound philosophical understanding, because doubts will come, bewilderment will come, and we will give up those practices. So that is the basic idea, that ashram is where the learning of philosophy comes by practical applications. The classes with help of traditional methodology used in the scriptures, as we mentioned some of them, there are other methods which are being utilized to help to analyze and understand the scripture. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Moshe. Your schedule is very tight, so thank you for coming here. To close this morning session, we have Sambha Mashai, Sambha Prabhu, will speak. He's also a very senior member of ISKCON. If I list all services he performed to Srila Prabhupada, I'll take all his time to speak. So he's also a very dear teacher by all students in the Academy. He will be speaking about civics and social studies. So he's not only a teacher here, but he teaches all the subjects, even archery to the children. And he's also pushing the Varnashram project of Gurukul, the agriculture fields we have, and Eco Village, that he's the inspiration for it. So, please speak.
Okay, so civics. Civics is basically the science of relationships, organized relationships, social system that you find in the material world. So, boys come to the Gurukul at a very young age. They practically don't know anything about the world. And gradually they grow up learning the different subjects of the school, philosophy, mantras, menial service, and different things like this. And basically my job is to introduce them to the world, what is happening outside there in the world, how is it organized, what did Srila Prabhupada think of it, how did he describe it, how did he think it should be. We understand that the ideal civic social system is Varnashram Dharma. The school, interestingly, is a Gurukul system, basically, caters for the three dvijas, the Brahmins, the Kshatriyas, and the Vaishyas. Those three dvijas, they come here and study in the school, learning primarily under the Brahminical system. So the culture is Brahminical, even though the subjects may be tailored to the individual dvijas, the Kshatriyas or the Vaishyas, like that. So how should boys relate to each other as they're growing up? The different varnas are there. There are different personalities. At every moment, a different kind of personality is being born. Sometimes a Vaishya is being born. Sometimes a Kshatriya is being born. Sometimes a Brahmin is being born. Sometimes a Shudra is being born. And there is a specific way in which they should behave with each other. We find this is totally missing outside in the world outside. It's completely missing. There's no understanding of it at all. There's no concept of it at all. So our job is to, and this is the way it works in the school here, the way the school is arranged, divided, managed. The idea is to bring out the qualities of each boy according to his varna. So the way the school is organized, for instance, we have some boys, the school is managed totally by the boys. The teachers just oversee and give advice, but the boys are managing everything. So for instance, we have a head boy now, Duranga from Australia. He's what, 16 or 17. He organizes the whole school. He's one of the best head boys we've had for a while. And everything's on time. Everything runs very nicely. And you can see, I remember actually, when he was very small, he had this tendency to organize. You know, what are you doing this for? Why is that going on? What's going on over here? He was like a little manager, even when he was like 12, 13. And when he became the head boy, I said to him, I said, you know, you've always been head boy. It's just your dharma to be the head boy of the school. And now he's in his element. And because of the fact that he himself has been through the system, because he shows his example, because he's punctual, because he's austere, all the things that he expects from boys, he is an example of. Therefore, they respect him. And so then when he says to do something, in general, it gets done. He doesn't have to harass, or sometimes he has to harass, but in general, because of the respect that the boys have for him, things run very nicely. So he's an example of his organizing ability, like the Kshatriya kind of spirit of organizing, or Vaishya spirit of organizing. Yes?
Just to put one point on this, Michel. And because he was a naughty boy when he was young, he knows all the tricks of the naughty boy. So he can control all of them.
Yeah, right. He has good insight into the mind of the young boy. So like that, here's one example. So then we have another boy, he's running the kitchen in the school. Young boy, arranging the menus, making sure that everything is cooked on time. And I've noticed in the last year or so, the prasad is excellent. Very, very good. So, you know, they've really imbibed that. And then other boys are taking care of the laborers, making sure that they're paid properly, making sure that they're doing the different jobs they're supposed to be doing. Other boys are in charge of the agriculture. So like this, as a boy shows ability in a certain area, slowly, slowly, he will be given opportunities to start to develop activities in that area. One of our boys, he's now doing one of the shops where we're selling prasad. And we have two shops. There's one set of boys are doing one set of prasad, and he's doing another set. So I said to him, why is it that you're doing this shop? We've already got a shop here. Why are you doing this shop? He said, well, Chaitanya Mahashaya saw that I had this really keen desire to develop this. And so he said, you do a shop also. So he's got his own shop. So like this, the idea is to bring out the innate qualities in each boy and fan those qualities and help them to really realize those. So that's how things are going on within the school itself. Now, of course, outside, in the outside world, there's a whole other system of organization. And Srila Prabhupada spoke vastly. If we look at the Srimad Bhagavatam, for instance, the Bhagavatam is full of examples of dealings between different kinds of people in different kinds of arrangements. You see the dealings between Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, between Shudras and Kshatriyas. So many different kinds of relationships are described in Bhagavatam. The relationships, how the relationships turn out, the respect that one has for another, like this. So we find right now in the material world that practically none of these things are being followed, and that actually there's a lot of falsehood going on. And our boys will leave the Gurukul here, and they will go out into this world, and so they need to be prepared for what they're going to face when they leave the school. So we discuss sometimes about, Prabhupada speaks about, for instance, one of the topics that Prabhupada speaks about is the United Nations, for instance. And Prabhupada speaks about how the United Nations, he says, it's a failed organization because there are new nations joining the United Nations all the time. So you may think, well, what's wrong with that, you know, the United Nations? But the reason why there are new nations joining is because what was once one nation has split up and become smaller nations because they can't unite. They can't cooperate with each other. So we see this is happening all the time. More and more nations are joining the United Nations because it's a completely failed premise, because they're actually falling apart. We were discussing about the formation of the nation state. And Prabhupada speaks about, he says, first of all, why nation? He says this concept is not there in the Vedic understanding, in the Vedic knowledge. There's no notion of nation. He says varnashram everywhere, yes. Varnashram across the board, across the world, varnashram should be there. But this idea of separating nation, what is this? The other day some of the boys were asking me to play the national anthem of Russia. And then one said, well, let's play the national anthem of America. And then we played the national anthem of Britain. And they're all, we are a great nation, we have fought our enemies, we will never be defeated. It's all a very warlike, divisive kind of propaganda. And this is the way the world is at the moment. It's very divisive, trying to separate people. Divide and conquer is one of the things that we learn about, how the governments of the world try to divide the people so that then they can conquer them. Create divisions amongst, you know, blacks and whites, or Jews and Christians, or Muslims and Christians, or whatever it is. There's always this need to cause division so that you can keep people separated and they can't be united. And we can see that there is a basically concerted effort to actually suppress the whole idea of Vanatham Dharma. The idea is, why are we here in the material world? Why have we come here? We've come here to realize who we are, what our position is, what our duties are, and how we can actually leave this material world and go to the spiritual world. So, simple living and high thinking. Srila Prabhupada introduced that concept to us very much, especially when Prabhupada was with us. The Bhakti Godhead magazines, in his books, in his conversations, very much discussion about simple living and high thinking. And the idea of simple living and high thinking is that by being simple, by producing all of your needs, being self-sufficient, you save time for Krishna consciousness. So that's the idea, that's the purpose of human life, is to save time for Krishna consciousness. Fulfill your material needs as simply as possible and save time for Krishna consciousness. But we see that the governmental setup of the world doesn't want people to be independently thoughtful. It doesn't want people to be independent and self-sufficient. The very opposite, they want them to be dependent and seeking shelter from people who are not actually interested in giving shelter. So we try to educate the boys in the actual situation of the world, in the actual, what are the main things that they can do to counteract the bad propaganda that there is. We see that Prabhupada was in favor. At a certain point, Prabhupada actually encouraged devotees to run for election in America. I think it was in the God We Trust Party, which started by some devotees in the United States. And they were actually running for office. And we know, of course, Prabhupada had this vision that Krishna consciousness can take over the world. And that through this knowledge of Krishna consciousness, through the education of Krishna consciousness, people can become relieved from the suffering that they're going through. And actually start on the process of self-realization. Prabhupada wanted us to set up to show ideal society, to show an ideal life. What is the ideal life? So we're studying on the other side of the road there, we're studying at Vanashram College, and the idea of the Vanashram College is to train boys in ideal life, how to set an example. Even we have some housing there for teachers. Pranamatha Guru is building a house there, I'm building a house there. Other teachers were encouraged to build there. The idea being that we will show also, by our own example, ideal grihastha life. So we're trying to set up as many examples of ideal life so that the boys, when they grow up, they can see that, yes, I can do this. This is not something which is some sort of pipe dream, which is some sort of impossibility. My teachers are showing me how I can actually come to develop ideal character and to do my best to use whatever abilities Krishna has given me to serve him and to serve others in society so that they can also come up to this standard. So basically that's the idea, that's why we teach civics in the school, so that we can try and inculcate in the boys their sense of belonging, their sense of what they should be doing in the world. So I think that's our time, right?
We thank Srila Prabhu for the explanation. We have more subjects in the school. We have martial arts, like I said, we have archery, we have different activities, mridanga, music, different things that the boys learn, but we had the main teachers here speaking to all of you, so you can have an introduction on what we teach, how we teach in Gurukul, and you can bring these thoughts to your places also. Gurukul is always open for any one of you who wants to come and inquire. This is a place of learning. We'll have evening sessions tonight with Maharaj. That will be on raising Krishna conscious children. It's for all of you, both parents, brahmacharis, or grihastas who wants to have children. Because we speak about also different levels of consciousness, the children, they go in different ages like that. I will pass again. Just one comment I want to make regarding the teacher is that this Gurukul specifically is very special. Why? Because it's installed in the headquarters of ISKCON. That's my approach. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he envisioned an international Vaishnava community. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he worked towards this path, and he increases the Vaishnava community. Srila Prabhupada, he went to the West, and he conquered the West with this prophecy. He came to Mayapur, he made Mayapur its headquarters, and Prabhupada himself, he opened his Gurukul. Those times. And then we see that in Gurukul, all the teachers that spoke here, we have more teachers who could not speak. They're all from different countries. We don't have two teachers from the same country in this Gurukul. So we see the beauty of Srila Prabhupada's mission. And the boys saying, yesterday the television, they were asking the boys, please, small boys, 5 years old, 6 years old. Tell me your name and your country. They're all from different countries. I'm from China. I'm from Germany. I'm from Kazakhstan. And this is the beauty of this movement. So I just want to make this point. You saw the variety of teachers here. I feel very ashamed by hearing these explanations that the teachers gave so nice. Anyway. I know many of you have this thought in your mind. I wish I had studied in the school. I was the reporter yesterday and he was checking the boys, the class. He said, I wish I had studied in the school. That's the mess. So I have here the list of activities. Yesterday we passed. Tomorrow morning we're going to have activities with the boys. Classes, services they do, and tomorrow will be the last day, and on the evening we have questions and answers with Maharaj again and Madhav Gauranga Prabhu. We still have to confirm his presence because the minister,
chief minister
of West Bengal is coming to Mayapur tomorrow, and Madhav Gauranga Prabhu, he is one of the deans of the school. He's also the martial arts teacher, and he's also the head of Mayapur security office. So security will be busy tomorrow. So I'll pass out the list. You can come put your names. This is just to have an idea of how many of you are interested in the activities, how we can organize it. So we can close now. Thank you very much.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.
Srila Prabhupada ki. Marika Bhaktarindra ki. Jai 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 Jai